The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Follow us on Twitter at LA News Guy. That's twitter.com/LA News Guy. Sunday morning newsmakers with Larry Marino, AM 870, The Answer.
Well, let's check in with Greg Clugston. He's our White House correspondent for Salem Radio News to talk with him about some of the stories of the past week and what it's like being in the White House press corps during this coronavirus situation. Greg, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you, Larry. Always great to talk with you and your listeners in L.A.
We see those events at the White House, and they certainly are practicing those physical distancing requirements. How is life different at the White House through this pandemic?
So for the past several weeks, anybody entering the White House complex, reporters, staff members, other officials, guests, have to go through the normal security checkpoint that you would assume at the White House. But of course, there's an extra layer of protection as everybody gets their temperature checked outside the gate on the sidewalk before they're allowed to go onto the White House grounds. And then for those of us in the White House press corps, and we have a series of rotating seats in those briefings, and there are only 14 seats out of the 49 that are being used during the briefings here these past few weeks because of social distancing, we get a second temperature check right before that briefing is to begin. So those are some of the precautions the White House has been taking, especially affecting reporters and those that are traveling. That we've seen the vice president take a couple of trips this past week, and the president has said that he may be visiting Arizona in the coming week. Those reporters also get checked, not just for the temperature, but also for COVID-19 if they're going to be traveling and in close proximity to the president or the vice president.
So going from 49 chairs to 14, does that give you a chance to ask a couple of questions directly, or does the president still pick certain people only?
Well, he certainly goes to people he's familiar with, and the TV networks usually get an outsized number of questions, as they have historically by not only this president, but past presidents. But the answer is yes. I have been in the room for several of the briefings over these past few weeks. There are 12 national radio networks that are a part of what we call the White House radio pool. We pool our resources together. And so that means every 12 days, Salem Radio is sitting in the seat for these briefings that only have 14 reporters attending. So I was there, for example, a week ago, Thursday night, when the president had his infamous out loud thinking about, cleansing the lungs with possibly the use of disinfectants. And so I was at that briefing, got a couple of questions in, and had had previous questions at previous briefings as well.
Yeah, I think he also talked about who knows about bright light being a possible thing, too.
Yes, he did. And, he's used these briefings to obviously give updates to the American people on where things stand on this pandemic. But he has also used them much like he used his rallies, his big campaign rallies before shelter in place became the new normal. He's often used those to air some grievances, whether he's picking on the news media, which he likes to do occasionally or more than occasionally, or make some political statements as well. So it's been sort of a mixed bag with those briefings over the last couple of months.
Greg Clugston is with us, our White House correspondent for Salem Radio News. Greg, let's walk through some of the stories. Obviously, you've got some states and communities opening up in stages. You've got others that are not. Kind of an interesting story as this evolves. You really get the sense that the president wants to get things opened up, especially when you look at the unemployment numbers, don't you?
Oh, he's itching to have this country reopen, and you can hear it in what he says, and you can by what he says, but also hear it in his voice as well. You know that he really wants to get things ramped up again. In fact, a couple of days ago, he was He was sounding, reminiscent about wanting things to return to normal. And he was even discussing during a meeting with industry executives on Wednesday, he was talking about his desire to not just return to normal, but to do so as quickly and as possible. Obviously, he wants it to be a safe procedure. But for example, he doesn't want football games to have, one or two seats in between the spectators. He wants full stadiums. He wants to go back to his campaign rallies with 20, 25, 30,000 supporters in an arena. He doesn't want restaurants to be half full because he knows that's going to have a real economic toll on those restaurant owners. So he's really itching to get back. And so we've seen this transfer really, Larry, of the power and authority and the decision making about the reopening move from the federal government to the states now, because as we just turned the calendar this week from April to May, those social distancing guidelines from the federal government essentially expired. And the White House said we're not going to extend them because they're basically incorporated into the plans now that governors have as they make decisions on how and when to reopen their states.
So how does this mesh? Is there a dynamic between the medical community that would like to carry social distancing into the fall and government agencies who realize you got to get things back versus local mayors like in Los Angeles who, keep extending things? How does it all mesh when you have differing views on when things should happen?
There's no question there is tension there. There's tension between the scientific view of this, the public health view of this, the economic view, even the mental health view. The president brings this up. He says it's not good for people to be, locked up and closed in their houses for weeks and months on end. And so this is, I'm sure there have been some very, very spirited conversations and discussions, for example, among members of the White House Coronavirus Task Force over the last couple of months, because they are made up of the president and his inner circle, which include, the Treasury Secretary, for example, the Labor Secretary, other people interested in the economy. And then you've got Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Deborah Birx representing public health. And so there have been colliding ideas, and so it's been a process at the federal level, and we're going to be seeing it play out across the country at the state level when you've got governors deciding to close beaches after having had them open, but then realizing that people aren't social distancing. You guys know all about that. And so it's going to be a little bit of a bumpy transition is my guess as the states roll these plans out.
Greg Clugson, talk with us about the medical treatments that are changing as we talk weekly. I mean, chloroquine was the hot item a week ago. Now, this other one that's out there, I can't pronounce it, remdesivir or something?
Yeah, remdesivir. Yeah, it's an antiviral drug, remdesivir, and we've known about it for a while, but this got a lot of attention here this past week. It's an experimental drug, and essentially, it was involved in a global study that was tested by the NIH, and they had more than 1,000 hospitalized COVID-19 patients that were a part of the test trial. And so essentially, according to Dr. Anthony Fauci and the researchers, the drug reduced the time that it took patients to recover by several days. Now, Fauci said that may not be a knockout to some people, getting better in, 10 days instead of 14 days. But he said statistically and on a percentage scale, this is proof. It's the first proof that we have that a drug can actually block or at least slow the virus, which we haven't had up until now. And so this is going to be a building block for researchers as they work on treatment. Now, of course, this treatment is separate from the efforts being made by scientists to develop a vaccine. That's going to take much longer, probably a year or longer.
Seems like there have been some developments there. A couple of places seem like they have something that may be promising. They're going to go into production just in case. A lot of effort to really move this story forward, because without a vaccine, you can do so much testing. But again, I think the experts have said that we don't even know if you have had it, whether that gives you immunity. There's a lot of unknowns, aren't there?
Oh, there are. And the more that we do learn about the virus, I think it's safe to say that we're learning that it's a much more complex disease than was first thought. not only in its how it's transmitted, but also the effect that it takes on people and the differences. At first, it was thought to be primarily a respiratory disease because people would, you know, have problems with, you know, fluid in the lungs and pneumonia like symptoms if things got too bad. And now we're hearing and reading about blood clotting. And so it's much more complex, and there are a lot of unanswered questions. But we are seeing researchers, both, you know, the private labs working in conjunction with government scientists, and then agencies like the FDA moving very quickly to move forward, for example, on remdesivir and making it available to COVID patients in hopes that it really is something that can be very positive.
I want to talk about cabin fever. A lot of Americans want to get out, do things. What about that? Is that now driving the momentum? We hear about these protests in various states. What has been the president's reaction to people wanting to get out?
His initial reaction to some of those protests that we saw over the last 10 to 14 days was generally favorable, because he said, I understand what these people are asking. He understands the mindset of needing to get back to work so that people can earn money and pay their bills. Some of the protests seem to be more, you know, leaning in the direction of violence than others, although we didn't see anything serious break out in terms of violence, thankfully. But it is interesting, because there have been a number of opinion polls across the country, you know, just asking everyday Americans how comfortable they feel about going back to work in an office setting, or going back to a restaurant to have dinner out in public following the coronavirus epidemic. And so a lot of these surveys, a lot of the opinion polls are showing that there's a real hesitancy from a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people, just about health safety and health concerns, because there is not the confidence, either because there's not testing at a wide enough level just for people in the everyday public, or obviously there's no vaccine yet at hand. So it's a mix between some people who are saying some of this is overblown. There are some people who believe that the efforts on social distancing and sheltering in place have been too draconian. They're too drastic, and they're overinflating the disease and its impact. Others are saying we need to be very careful and go slowly.
Greg Clugson is our White House correspondent for Salem Radio News. We thank him for his time with us. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Larry.
Sunday Morning Newsmakers with Larry Marino.